us. So we'll be continuing from this book, The Essence of Infinite Meaning, Teachings from the Adapted Verse of Sutra of Infinite Meaning. We are at page 221. Okay, we'll off the light, and you can have your half an hour of awareness-based meditation. Just relax body and mind, maintain awareness to stabilize your awareness nature. Then use the awareness to meditate, to develop understanding. For those who are used to using object of meditation or skillful means to train your mind to develop the stability or sati, you can also use them. Amidst all these various appearances, if we have deep wisdom, we can clearly comprehend all kinds of principles. This is very true. We will be able to use discerning wisdom to differentiate all phenomena and appearances, and use impartial wisdom to view all sentient beings equally. Because of our attachments, we are attached to what we possess and to what we crave to have. Our mind gives rise to desire and thus have countless afflictions. Desire arises from attachment to appearances. But living in this world, there is no way we can restrain from discriminating between different appearances. So what is important during the process of discrimination is to learn how not to form attachment, how not to be obstructed by appearances, and how not to be entangled in affliction. So these are just description of what you should do. But how do you cultivate and develop all this ability is another thing. That's why it's not easy. So in order to have the ability to do all this, you must develop wisdom, insight. We are the direct seeing and the awakening. You must understand all dhammas, all appearances, and even all phenomena. A better way to develop all this understanding is through cultivation. When you have developed the cultivation, you will know how desire comes to be, craving comes to be, how your mundane mind stir and react to sense experience. So all this, you will see them clearly. Then how, in return, the form and mind, through their own craving, not able to get what they wanted, develops affliction. So all this affliction come from attachment. So when there is attachment without wisdom, affliction will continue to arise. So in order to free or liberate, the mind must develop wisdom, understanding. So that part is not really taught, but I explain it to you so that you can develop the understanding. Then the other part we need to familiar ourselves with is desire arise from attachment. So this word is being used very often. But a better word is craving. Craving has three types. Craving for the sensual experience, that is one form of craving, karma tanha. Then the other two types of craving is craving to be and not to be. So this craving actually arises on Sakkaya Ditthi, self-delusion. And when you can penetrate all phenomena, all appearances, and realize that they are dependent originating condition arising causal phenomena, empty, non-self, not you, then you can break free. Then there is no more craving. There is no entity to crave, to be or not to be. All these are the wrong view, self-delusion, Sakkaya Ditthi that the mundane mind cling on to, grasps on to without understanding. They fail to penetrate the unreality of form. They fail to understand that their form and mind is just a karmically conditioned phenomenon, condition arising, causal phenomenon, supported by condition. If you cannot develop the wisdom to penetrate all this or awaken to all this, you will be trapped, you will be afflicted. Then that self-delusion will continue to manifest. So this part, make a note. Then I read on. As practitioner, learning the Buddha's teaching, since the Buddha has opened and revealed, we must now realize it and enter into it. So these are the four stages. After we unlock our true nature and understand the Dhamma. So this sentence is pretty profound. The word, after we unlock our true nature, that sentence itself is very difficult to realize. Unless you can realize your true mind, you can come into contact with your true nature, you will never be able to develop the understanding of the truth. That's why here is it, after we unlock our true nature and understand the Dhamma, we also must vow to use the Dhamma to save and transform sentient beings. This is to go the Bodhisattva way. When we develop the cultivation, the first thing is to realize our true mind, our true nature. That's why here the author say, unlock our true nature. Then you will understand the Dhamma. After that, you must develop the vow, the Bodhisattva vow. And you make use of this Dhamma that you have realized to save and transform sentient beings, thereby passing on the light of wisdom and using the Dhamma to transform one another. This is the Bodhisattva path or Bodhisattva way. So perfect enlightenment is inseparable from our mind and from all things in the world. When our mind and all things in the world are one, there will be no discrimination between good and bad, superficial and subtle. In this way, we will have no attachment to the appearances of anything in the world, as this would otherwise cause desire and endless affliction to arise. Everything starts with mind. Start with our mundane mind. If we meticulously observe our own mind, see, mindfulness, observation, the silent mind, without discrimination, without any movement or content of consciousness, just observe, means that true mind, the silent mind, the meditative mind, which is just aware, can observe. So when we can do that, then understanding will arise. you will come to understand that everything starts with our mind. So if we meticulously observe our own mind, we will see that everything is Dhamma, and that everything is created by the mind. Mind make Ade. That's the reason why in the Mayana tradition, they have this famous Mandarin saying, Yiqie, Yiqie, Wei Xing Zhao. Because all things are mind make, like the Buddha under Dhammapada verse 1 and 2. Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, all things arise. That's why everything is mind make. When it comes to mind, you have to understand there are two types of mind. One that is often referred to is the mundane mind, the thinking mind, or we call it the heedless mind, the mind that thinks a lot, constantly lost in thought, latches on to things, to all the mundane things. That's why we call it the thinking mind or the mundane mind. The other one is your true mind, your true nature. When thought ceases, who are you? Find out. Meditation is to realize that cessation of thought. When thought ceases to be, that true nature arises. You can realize the true mind. When you let your sankhara activity settle down and return to its original state of tranquility and stillness, then you will realize your true mind, your true nature. Okay, so we finish. Yeah? We go on to the next stanza. The mind is the Buddha. The Buddha, the mind, and the Dhamma are intrinsically one. This is very true. The nature and appearances of all things are infinite and inconceivable. So this adapted verse is beautiful. Yeah? That's why Master Shen Hao also said the same. For jiu shi xing, xing jiu shi fo. Wu hui xing, jiu wu hui fo. So all these are very beautiful sayings. Okay, I'll read on the commentaries, then hopefully you can develop better understanding. Everyone inertly has Buddha mind and a pure and undefiled nature. This is what we call the Buddha nature, forcing. When we observe our daily living with this mindset, the Dhamma is everywhere because the mind is the Buddha. The Buddha, the mind, and the Dhamma are intrinsically one. Since the Buddha said that infinite Dhamma comes from one Dhamma, why did he have to expound so many teachings? This is because all things in the world have their own nature and appearances that constantly entice our mind. When the mind connects with the natures and appearances of things, it gives rise to all kinds of discriminating thoughts. This is duality, discriminative thought. Because of this discriminative thought, it gives rise to greed for the various things we encounter, which causes us to experience countless affliction, because sentient beings have a countless number of affliction. The Buddha had to expound an infinite number of teachings. So this is the explanation given by the author. So we can see that the nature and appearances of all things are infinite and inconceivable. Yet, however, many natures and appearances they are. When we continue to analyze them and break them down, ultimately we are left with nothing. Once we separate all matter into its fundamental components, its appearance disappears. However, all matter can also come into existence from nothing, except from zero come one, one comes infinity. If causes and conditions converge, then appearances arise. Therefore, the principle of matter is truly profound and inconceivable. So this one you have to realize it. Eh? It's not easy. You have to silence your mind and awaken to it. Similarly, within Tzu-chi's mission of humanistic culture, there are different departments. Combining each department's expertise and technology enable us to see video images from thousands of miles away, or it can help us analyze the life cycle of cells or organisms by creating the process as animations that display what cannot normally be seen with the naked eye. For example, one might show the process of a bird's birth, starting from the embryo forming inside the eggshell, up to the time the chick breaks out of the shell, and then continuing on until the bird has completely matured with fully grown feathers. All of this can be seen and experienced through meticulous animation, allowing us to understand the bird's growth process. It clearly requires many innovation and combined wisdom of many people to attain this result. When it comes to various matter coming together and taking shape, each person may know only one part or another without any one person knowing the entire process. For unenlightened beings, no matter how capable we are, there will always be limits to what we can accomplish as individuals. But by combining the limited abilities of many people, we can create limitless strength and ability. It is only by combining the effort of individuals that we can all succeed. This is very true for our mundane world. That's why we call it brainstorming. We must hold discussion meetings. Then we must brainstorm topic and subject so that all the whatever appropriate, good, beautiful ideas can be assimilated and evolve out. But you need somebody who is good to lead, to guide, to actually organize all this. The person who did this must be someone experienced that has the ability to make full use of each and every individual's capabilities. The Buddha had a complete understanding of the principle of everything in the world. So he opened this Dhamma door for us to make it possible for us to study and understand. In the awakened state of the Buddha, all things between heaven and earth are fundamentally one. And the Dhamma is infinite and boundless. This is very true because of the oneness nature. Okay, so we finish the next stanza. So we are coming to the next adapted verse. The Sutra of Infinite Meaning states, at that time, great magnificent Bodhisattva again addressed the Buddha. Well-honored one, the Dhamma you teach is inconceivable. The capacities and natures of sentient beings are also inconceivable. And liberation to the Dhammadhamma is inconceivable as well. We have no remaining doubts about the Dhamma expounded by the Buddha. However, because sentient beings' mind give rise to delusion, I therefore ask for your teaching again. Well honored one, during the more than 40 years since the Tathagata attained full enlightenment, you have often expounded for sentient beings the meaning of the four states of existence of all things. What is the difference in meaning between all the Dhamma that you have taught us in the past and what you have stated today? This profound and surpassed Great Vehicle Sutra of Infinite Meaning. So this question is very good. They want to know what is the difference. Because from this one Dhamma, all Dhamma arise. So great magnificent Bodhisattva's question to the Buddha. In these lines, affirms the importance of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning. After the Buddha has given teachings for 42 years, he began to expound the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, which acts as the opening sutra to the Lotus Sutra. It gathers together the provisional teachings that the Buddha had already expounded, while it begins to shift in focus towards the true Dhamma. Therefore, this sutta is the turning point. In actual fact, Sakyamuni Buddha, after his enlightenment at the age of 35, he actually taught for 45 years. He passed away at the age of 80. He left home. He left the palace life at the age of 29. So after 6 years, he realized his enlightenment just at age 35. So after 42 years only, he started teaching this Sutra of Infinite Meaning, the last phase of his teaching, accumulating into the Lotus Sutta. This is the three the threefold Lotus Sutta. Fa Hua San Pu Jing. That's why we have the Sutra of Infinite Meaning as the first book, followed by chapter 2. Sutra of Infinite Meaning got three sections. First is chapter 1 on virtue, followed by proclamation of Dhamma, the teaching. Then chapter 3 is on the 10 merits. So now we have finished virtue. Now we are coming somewhere in between the proclamation of the teaching. We have not finished yet. Then finally, we have the 10 merits. So that one is Wu Liang Yi Jing, or Sutra of Infinite Meaning. Then after that, the Buddha taught this Lotus Sutta, Miao Hua Lian Hua Jing. Then of course, the last one is Meditation Sutra of Samantarabhadra Bodhisattva, is Pu Xian Jing. So these three, you combine them, it become the threefold Lotus Sutra. Fa Hua San Pu Jing. Okay, so now you go into the sharing. Well, it begins the shift in focus towards the true Dhamma. So this one is the teaching for Bodhisattvas, for those perfecting themselves to become Samasambuddha. That's why it's called the true ultimate Dhamma. Therefore, this sutra was the turning point. Well honored one, the Dhamma that you teach is inconceivable. All teachings that the Buddha expounded are true. Although they are profound, everyone was able to comprehend them because the way the Buddha explained them. because of the way the Buddha explained them. This is truly amazing. The capacities and nature of sentient beings are also inconceivable. There is such an incredible variety of them. Sentient beings have 84,000 afflictions, and each of these afflictions can lead to bodhi. The Buddha's aim was to treat sentient beings' affliction one by one. Therefore, he opened 84,000 Dhamma doors that leads to awakening. Just think about this. In our daily life, trying to explain the principle to just one person is already very difficult. How much more difficult must it be to teach the true principle to all sentient beings? This one is very true. Huh? The range of capacity of sentient beings is truly inconceivable. The Buddha's enlightened nature is radiant and inconceivable, and the scope of confusion and affliction is sentient being is also inconceivable. Liberation through the Dhamma door is also inconceivable. The Buddha wished to help sentient beings of all capabilities. To clearly understand the true principles, to free themselves of confused thinking, and thus attain liberation. Therefore, he opened Dhamma door for each of them. The number of Dhamma door is incalculable. This is also inconceivable. In Buddhist sutras, we often find very large numbers used to signify quantities. For example, at this single Dhamma assembly, it is said that there were 80,000 bodhisattvas, and in addition to them, millions of citizens and other sentient beings. There were so many that they could not be counted. Therefore, the number is represented by the word countless. In the sutra, we often see the description countless, hundreds of thousands, reaching millions of billions. Such figures are just expressions which are used to give everyone a sense of inconceivable rhyme of the infinite. In different countries, numbers are often used differently. Once a group of professors and doctors from the United States, Hong Kong, and India came to visit the Jingshu Abbot. They specialized in the study of human nervous system and were researching how to restore brain cells in people who had had stroke. Their work would allow these people to regain their language capability or use their limbs and so on. As we were chatting, an Indian scientist mentioned that in India there was a woman called the Hugging Saint who truly cared for people living in poverty and hardship and would therefore hug 10,000 people every day. I was curious and asked, "That is incredible. How does she have the time? Is that really possible?" The doctor and professor who were present also found it incredible. One day, it's make out 86,400 seconds. A second passes in the space of a thought. Moreover, one also needs time to rest. On average, giving someone a hug would take at least a few seconds. How can one have enough time to hug that many people? After I kept pressing the Indian scholar, he answered, "I'm not a mathematician, so I can't analyze this." Therefore, in modern time, we also have such example of inconceivable numbers because we cannot understand how they are possible. We feel they are inconceivable. So great magnificent Bodhisattva reported to the Buddha, "We fully understand the Dhamma that you have taught us, and we have no doubt. But sentient beings have so many varying capabilities that they are unable to attain a thorough understanding. Therefore, it is easy for them to become confused and deluded. That is the reason why I ask again." He asked for the Buddha's teaching, not because he did not understand, nor because he doubted the Buddha's earlier teaching. It was because he was worried that future sentient beings would be unable to understand the Buddha Dhamma, and this would therefore give rise to more doubt and delusion. Thus, he asked the Buddha to explain further. During the more than 42 years since Tathagata attained the full enlightenment, you have often expounded the meaning of the four states of existence of all things to sentient beings. What is the difference in meaning between the Dhamma that you have taught in the past and that you have stated today? This profound and surpassed Great Vehicle Sutra of infinite meaning. The Dhamma taught previously by the Buddha never depart from the four states of existence, that is, arising, abiding, changing, and ceasing, formation, existence, decay, and disappearance, or birth, aging, illness, and death. In the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, the Buddha was still explaining the meaning of the four states, suffering, emptiness, impermanent, and non-self, and the principle that our inner nature is neither big nor small, and does not arise or cease. So why did he say that this is the profound, unsurpassed Great Vehicle Sutra of Infinite Meaning? What is the actual difference between this Dhamma and the earlier teaching? Because he wanted to dispel the doubt and confusion among future sentient beings. So great, magnificent Bodhisattva asked the Buddha to again explain this for everyone. Without the right condition, even when near sentient beings fail to see, with the root and power of charity, even from afar, they understand. With the root and power of charity, infinite Dhamma door open. Different capacities require different teaching. Thus, the footprint of Dhamma must be far-reaching. So again, here we see the importance of what we call charity or dana parami. In order to see the Buddha, we need our karmic causes, condition, and capacity, and opportunity to come together. Thus, without the right condition, even when near, sentient beings fail to see. This is very true. Even if you have been born in the same era or time and place as the Buddha, we may still have failed to see him. If we cannot even see the Buddha, how can we hear the Buddha Dhamma? During the Buddha's lifetime, he once came to a city with a population of 90,000 people. Of those, 30,000 saw the Buddha and heard him expound the Dhamma. Another 30,000 only knew that Prince Siddhartha from the kingdom of Kapilavastu had attained Buddhahood and that he had come to this city. However, they did not come to pay their respect, nor did they hear him speak. The remaining 30,000 never even hear about the Buddha or the Buddha Dhamma. As you can see, without suitable capabilities and condition, even if they are very near the Buddha or the Dhamma, sentient beings are unable to recognize or even be aware of them. So this is very true for society. If you don't have the interest, the affinity, you cannot mean, and you will not have the condition to listen or come into contact with the root and power of charity. That's why Dana Parami is very important. Huh? The root is the base. Then the power of charity or Dana Parami, even from far away, they understand. With the root and power of charity, infinite Dhamma doors open. Very true. That's why you must have Dana Parami. The root and power of charity is none other than a heart filled with love. As long as our heart contains the root and power of charity or Dana Parami, even if we are far from the Buddha, we can still thoroughly understand the true principle. That it is not necessary for us to hear the Buddha speak in person in order to understand the Dhamma. Awaken our kindness and love, or lead ourselves and others onto the path of charity. With the root and power of charity, we can open infinite Dhamma door to goodness. This is very true. For instance, I always say, loving and respecting ourselves is a way to repay the grace we have been shown. Loving and respecting others is a way to show gratitude. People who can love and respect themselves will not commit transgression with their bodies or mind. Thus, they will not cause their elders and those who care about them to worry. If we always feel gratitude towards others, naturally our interaction with them will not give rise to affliction in our heart, such as greed, hatred, and delusion, arrogance, and doubt. Then not only are we being kind to ourselves, but we are also being loving and respectful towards others. So this shows to us the importance of virtue. All this virtue that is mentioned here is very good. Like respect, gratitude, kindness, metta or love, respectfulness, and all these other good virtue, including generosity, to repay the grace we have been shown. Then loving and respecting others in a way to show gratitude. People who can love and respect themselves will not commit transgression. All these are very true. So the Buddha skillfully established many different Dhamma doors to cultivating goodness in response to the many varying capabilities of sentient beings. Different countries in the world have different religion and sentient beings. Sorry, I read again. Different countries in the world have different religion, and sentient beings have many different capabilities. Therefore, there must be different types of teaching methods. Different capacities require different teaching. For example, when people today are ill, they can be treated by Western or Chinese medicine. Different places may administer different treatments. Traditional Chinese medicine focuses on diet and herbal medicine for healing. For this perspective, all kinds of plants, not to mention the everyday food that we eat, are in fact medicine. Rice, flour, barley, fruits, and vegetables. This can all be used to heal the body and replenish its nutrients. There was a time when doctors advocate eating less starch, means less carbohydrate, in order to avoid an excessive intake of sugar. This is very true. Patients who suffered from gout were also encouraged to avoid nuts and beans. Actually, whether we eat rice or beans, the important thing is to eat them in moderation. To be healthy, we need a balanced diet. If we are overly partial to certain food, that will cause an imbalance. If we are feeling unwell, practitioners of Chinese medicine can tell us which food we need in order to bring balance to our body. Or they may give us a herbal formula to treat the illness. This is a method of traditional Chinese medicine. Therefore, in places of Buddhist practice, dinner is referred to as medicine, meaning that the food served at dinner time is for the purpose of replenishing nutrients and should simply be considered medicine. Medicine is a wide and profound area of study. Both Chinese and Western medical culture are expanding and developing at a rapid pace. Traditional Chinese medicine approach is to first understand a patient's physical condition by feeling their pulse and then treating them through prescription. Western medicine uses instruments to examine patients. These include stethoscope to listen to the patient's heartbeat and breathing, and endoscopy, computer tomography, and other imaging methods that allow doctors to see inside the body. By just pushing the button, images of bones, tendons, blood vessels, and internal organs can be captured by this instrument. The different methods used to diagnose and treat illness are also examples of different capacities requiring different teachings. So this is the author's way of explanation. Other examples can be found in the wide range of modern technological advancement. By using satellite communication, it is not only possible for one person to see the whole world, but also for 1,000 people to look as though one set of eyes. In an instant, it is possible for everything in the world to appear before our eyes. Photos of the Earth can even be taken from space to observe the changes in weather and give information about things like wind direction, etc. This technological development that allow us to reach across great distance are also a kind of Dhamma. They are opening the doors of learning wider and wider. It is because different capacities require different teaching that the footprint of the Dhamma must be far-reaching. The Buddha was the great enlightened one of the universe. From one truth, he could reach and comprehend all things. All principle and matter in the universe start with the single truth. But he had to carefully contemplate whether sentient beings could understand this. If we have a karmic affinity with the Buddha, then we will have the capacity or capabilities to understand the Buddha Dhamma, no matter how far we are from the Buddha. For example, Tsuchi volunteers are spread among many different countries, yet they all feel joyful when they hear the name Tsuchi. This is because they have a karmic connection with Tsuchi. All it takes is for a single seed to be planted in that country, and once condition have matured, this one seed can bring many local people together to join Tsuchi and start doing good deeds. This is how opportunities are formed. As long as we have roots of goodness, this opportunity will manifest, because Tsuchi, with its mission statement and all the very good activity that they have, can really manifest into something very wholesome, very beautiful. Then, regardless of where we are, we can comprehend the principle. Therefore, when infinite Dhamma doors are opened, the Dhamma will be far-reaching, because the Dhamma is very beautiful. Dhamma are truth. Truth can be applied to all things. That's the reason why Dhamma is very wonderful and incredible. Where is the truth? It explains the way things are. It is the reality. So everything that we experience within the conditional is never apart from this truth. That's why Dhamma is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. For those who see, they always see. Means truth is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. For those who have the ability to comprehend the Dhamma, they will see truth everywhere. In fact, truth implies seeing the universal characteristics of all things, all phenomena, all appearances. When you can see them in all things, you understand the way nature works. You understand deeply the profound meaning of anicca, dukkha, anatta, the universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, non-self and empty nature. Then all of the essential Dhamma or teaching that the Buddha teach, they will unfold, they will manifest. So all this understanding is very beautiful. I think we will stop there. Okay, so we'll open up for sharing.
Actually, I have a question to ask, and that's why I'm not feeling well.
No problem. You just ask.
Earlier on the page, end of page 221.
Yeah.
That is a sentence saying, when our minds and all things in the world are one.
Yes.
There will be no discrimination between good and bad, or superficial and subtle.
Yeah.
So in this way, we will have no attachment to the appearance anything in the world, as this would otherwise cause desires and aggressions to arise. Can you elaborate, especially on the our minds and all things in the world are one.
I explained this before, but you listen again. Actually, it's not really, I'm not really well. The throat is disturbing me because it makes me want to cough. Understand? Because I had this problem, I think, since yesterday. It like the throat is itchy. Actually, earlier on, I sensed that I am about to get sore throat really. Then it turned into cough. Then it every time tickle me. That's why I try not to talk. Otherwise, I will aggravate the throat. So I will answer your this question. You say, what is mentioned there is actually the oneness nature. When you are able to be in that oneness nature, then there is no mundane mind. That's why there is no duality. There is no this and that, then everything is understood. So this sentence comes from the realization of the true nature, or what we call it, the awareness nature, the true mind. When you are able to realize that and stabilize that, and your mind can be one with everything, then it becomes what was described. So maybe I will read it out so that people understand. So perfect enlightenment is inseparable from our mind and from all things in the world. Then the Buddha described, when our mind and all things in the world are one. See, this is the oneness nature. Means spacious awareness without a center. There will be no discrimination, because there is no mundane mind. That true mind, that nature is without thought. Then When there is no mundane mind, there is no discrimination, duality of good and bad, superficial or subtle. So in this way, you will have no attachment where there is no ego, the egoic mind, to the appearances of anything in the world. As this would otherwise cause desire and endless affliction to arise, then the Buddha went on to describe, everything starts with our mind. If we meticulously observe our own mind, means daily mindfulness, awareness, you silence yourself, we will see that everything is Dhamma, because Dhamma is true. And everything that arises, they are just the way things are, in accordance with nature's truth. So truth is whatever that can explain the reality is the truth. So Dhamma is true. So when you have Dhamma, you will see that everything within existence is the truth, is Dhamma. And the last sentence is the most important, and that everything is created by mind, means mind make a day. So this understanding comes from that oneness nature, then you can realize your true mind. And you can silence until that nature becomes very stable. Then you will understand what that thing is. I used to explain, that one is not a being. That one is not you. That one is just a nature. But that nature is the unconditioned. And that one can never be realized unless your thought ceases. Unless you stop all the thinking. Then when you stop all the thinking, there is no more thinking. Then what happened? The true mind manifests. And what is the true mind? That's why you must go in through your awareness. Stabilize it to understand it. This one is with clarity, the unconditioned, no sankhara activity or movement. It's just aware. That's it. Aware. Just aware. That is the essence of mind. That's why it can be aware of silence without sense data. Because that is the nature. Then it can be aware of all the activity and movement. But once you arise the aggregate of mind, then you are no longer with the awareness. Means the mundane mind has surfaced. You have started the creation. Creation means the mundane mind has started to manifest, operate. And this is the mind that gives rise to the mind right creation. And when the Buddha say our mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief, this one refers to the mundane mind. But this nature is very beautiful. It's perfect by itself, it has nothing. But yet, all Dhamma arise from that nature. That's why it's very difficult to understand. And that nature is not a being. You cannot hold on to it, cling on to it, or like believe that there is the deathless element that is you. No. Whatever you describe is not that thing. Because there is the unconditioned. It's just an awareness nature. But this is when your form and mind is connected, then that is the nature. But when your wisdom is developed through the direct seeing, insight into phenomena, awaken to the universal characteristic, then you have deep, stable understanding, then the wisdom connected to that nature, then this wisdom will enable that nature to completely cease. Then during that time, even the pure awareness, the first thing that come out from that nature also cease, also no more. That's how Nibbana can be realized. To realize Nibbana, even the pure awareness without thought, that one also ceases. And you cannot describe, you cannot talk about where is the unconditioned. But when there is still this, what they call it the residue. That's why Nibbana with residue refer to the five aggregates of form and mind. Means that five aggregates of form and mind still have the karmic life force to come back. It will not cease into parinibbana. When it's no longer with the life force to come back or condition for the five aggregate to manifest again, then we call it parinibbana. Means after that, everything is gone. So the difference between the usual cessation and the one that people do to concentration or jhana one is very big difference. So the one that go into one-pointedness through jhana, where they experience very deep stillness and calmness, no thought, but everything is locked and held by the thought. No thought is still a thought, because how do you know there is no thought? Where is the thought telling you there is no thought? This thought is in concentration, one-pointedness, and everything is in that condition state. That's why that mind cannot move. And there is this knowing inside there. And there is a thought. So that is the big difference. Whereas the one that goes through cessation, even a glimpse of it, the pure awareness also sees that momentary experience come out, then there is a change of lineage. Like you become an Arya from a Puttijana, change of lineage into an Arya. Just that glimpse of Nibbana, that is for the sainthood way. Then for those who have the ability to go into cessation for longer period, especially Anagami, Arahant and Bodhisattvas who has gone beyond, they can experience Nibbana for longer period. But as long as their five aggregate of form and mind still have condition to come back, then they will arise again. They will arise again. Means that one is not parinibbana. But when the life force is no more, the enlightened being will know they are going through parinibbana. Like the Buddha before his passing, he know the form and mind will cease. After that, no more. Then it's just the unconditioned still. But that nature is still there. Like the Sakyamuni Buddha's nature, they are still there. The spiritual nature, the karmic nature, the perfection, everything is still there in the midst of life and nature existence. So hopefully, Adeline, with this, you can develop further understanding. So thank you for the condition too. Otherwise, I cannot explain all this. Okay.
Thank you, Brother. Very good explanation. Thank you. Otherwise, I would think how to do it. The minds and all things in the world are one.
Yeah.
It's something like, we have to take things as they are, how? Yeah.
Yeah, this is not a concept.
Yeah.
A concept, then, like you say, how to do it.
Yeah.
The thought will go and think how to be one with everything. That's why it has to be that oneness nature.
Yeah.
And you are just aware without a center. Means you are one with that nature. And that nature is the eternal nature, the oneness nature. They use different name to name it. Some call it the Buddha nature, the original nature, the oneness nature, or the eternal nature. But it's not a being, it's not you. Because that nature is the original nature, primordial, actually before everything starts. That's why it's called the source. Some call it the source. the beginning. You need to realize that to understand that, because the mundane mind that realizes itself and sees through the wisdom will go into it. Then when it comes out of it, it will understand. So that one is Nibbana. But the other one, the oneness nature, is before you go into the unconditioned Nibbana or cessation, the awareness nature become like expanding, like one with everything. That nature is actually like that one. That's why no matter how far, whatever the distance is, that nature can be one with everything. It want to know, it can know. That's why that oneness nature is very, very unique, very, I won't use the word powerful. It may make you gullible. It's not really in that sense powerful, in the sense that it has the ability, the sensitivity, the special ability to understand things, to like be one with everything. The normal mind cannot do. Okay.
This afternoon, there's some experience.
Ah, good. Sado.
Yeah. Today is thanks Miss Lee for reminding. Today is Maha Chanti birthday. Yeah. So Maha Chanti Bodhisattva birthday. So I've been playing the Maha Chanti Dharani's on my computer whole day. You know, it just continue playing, and then then after there's a Heart Sutta chanting. Then I don't know, it's something like it struck me, you know. So to cultivate the Bodhisattva way is really, really not easy. Yeah.
When you understand, it's not difficult too.
Yeah. So and this word is appearing in my mind, you know, Kong Xiang. Kong Xiang is just Bu Sen Bu Mie, Bu Go Bu Jing, Bu Zhen Bu Jie. So this few words really, I mean, the understanding of today is really different.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
It's from the Heart Sutta.
Because recently I've been contemplating on the Sila, Samadhi, and Panya.
Yeah.
And I read the I listen from the YouTube, a monk sharing, a Mahayana monk, he said it's like three circles. So Jie, Ting, Hui. Ting is at the center. Samadhi is at the center. If without Samadhi, you very difficult for you to have a Sila and Panya. So that really strike me, you know. So I've been, because Brother Teo has keep on emphasizing how important is the daily mindfulness, you know. So I've seen the beauty of it, and I've been seeing it a lot recently in my daily life, you know, how the five aggregates, all our senses, play with us, you know. I've seen a lot. So, you know, a lot of reflections. So, So when today these words appeared to me, the Kong Xiang, so the Sama, the thing is something like Bu Zhen Bu Jian. We cannot be over, we cannot be less. I don't know, this is my understanding. So
That one, the meaning is different. That one refer to the empty nature, the true emptiness. In true emptiness, there is no addition, no subtraction, and all those things. It's not the middle part. You don't get it confused. It is that thing which cannot be described. That's why Sen Lao Ping Si, everything don't exist inside that. Then just to correct a little bit, just now you mentioned about the talk that you heard, the monk told you the three circles, Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. So you need Samadhi to have Sila, is the other way around already, because you need Sila first. And without the Dana Parami, it's very difficult to have the good life, to cultivate, to maintain sila. Sila need mindfulness, need some form of initial wisdom to really perfect it. Then when sila is being developed, then only the mind accumulate into samadhi. Because if you don't keep your sila, you will have a lot of karmic obstruction. You will break karmic, a lot of karma which you encounter in daily life will be broken by a person who doesn't keep sila. So without sila, your mind cannot settle down. Karmic obstruction will be there. Then there is always this what they call mental hindrance. Your karmic obstruction are mental hindrance that obstruct your true mind, your true nature. That's why from karmic obstruction, it creates heedless thinking. It creates all the negativity of karma, the stirring of the mind, the reaction of the mind, and all those things. And because sila is not there, if your sila is pure, then this samadhi will kick in. You will settle down very fast. Because all this obstruction is gone, then your five spiritual faculties sets in very fast. Then it will root out the mental hindrance. Without sila, this mental hindrance will be there. Karmic obstruction will be there. A lot of what they call heedless thinking, conditioned by wrong thought, wrong view, and karmic negativity or karmic obstruction, they will surface. Even that they saw, described that what there's a what Jing Ya or what I forgot to say that lady, Jing Ya, she explained about the karmic thing. A lot of this mind state you cannot meditate is because of karmic obstruction. So karmic obstruction comes from violation of precepts. So without precept, samadhi cannot kick in. But when precept is in order, samadhi naturally kick in. So what they tell you when you need samadhi first is those who do concentration, samatha. Because when you do concentration, you develop one-pointedness of absorption meditation or calmness meditation. That is a conditioned mind, conditioned state. Then with that, they think they cannot get angry. Their mind will not stir. So they thought that one is center. From there, your sila will be in order. Your wisdom will be in order. But that one is a conditioned mind. That one is not a free mind. The free mind, you need to have understanding inside there for it to develop samadhi. So initially, what you need is dana parami to have the good condition for you to cultivate. Then you can develop the perfection of sila from your understanding. Means you see the importance of sila. Then when you see the importance of sila from the right view, you go in. Then you will come to realize when your sila is well kept, your karmic obstruction is gone. Your stirring of mind is gone. Your spiritual faculty fall into place very easily because there is no more violation of karma. When you don't violate karma, there is no karmic negativity. So karmic repercussion, karmic obstruction, all these things will not surface. That's why dana is very important. For dana, dana leading to sila is very important. So when sila comes to a stability, then naturally the cultivator will know. When your sila is very pure, you will know. You have a type of nature where the Dharma protector like you, the devas like you, because your sila is very pure. And because of your sila, there is a light that will shine forth. Then your mind will have the ability to go into samadhi naturally. Then when the samadhi arises, you can see things as they are and develop wisdom. leading to straightening of view and all those things. So Sila, Samadhi, and Panya is actually Noble Eightfold Path, starting with right view. Right view, most important. Then right view will condition you to have right thought. Then right thought is the one that you need, because without right thought, your action and speech and livelihood will fall apart. So right view leading to right thought. So that right thought is a straightening of you. Then from there, you will be able to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, the appropriate right action and right speeches leading to right living or right livelihood. So all this will fall into place. Then, of course, the four right effort and all those things. So Sila, Samadhi, and Panya is basically Noble Eightfold Path. You don't go and separate them. You go and separate them, your cultivation will go haywire. Because like the five spiritual faculty, they need to be balanced. You cannot be too strong on one. Like Sada, your Sada can be unshakable, yes, no problem. But if you only hold on to Sada and doesn't give you the Virya, then you cannot move. That's why Sada leading to Virya. Then if you develop Virya, but you cannot develop the Sati leading to Samadhi, then Panya cannot arise. So this five is actually to be cultivated together. So like the Noble Eightfold Path, Sila, Samadhi, and Panya is one path factor. That's why it's called Noble Eightfold Path. There are eight path factors within that one Noble Eightfold Path. Understand that. Then for those who play Mahjong, last time I used to give this example, I don't know whether you all remember or not. Given to the first batch, I think you are one of the first batch, Adeline. You say you know how to play Mahjong. Let's say you have either Manji or Sokji or Tongji. You got three of the Yatong, three of the Gao Tong. Means 3-3. Then in between 2-3-4-5-6-7-8. So total is 13 card. What do you call? Those who play Mahjong, they know. This is called the famous not Sasamyu. Sasamyu is different. This is Jiu Zi Lian Huan. Jiu Zi Lian Huan means they call all the nine Tongji. Any Tongji come, they will eat. They will give. So Noble Eightfold Path is like that. It's one path, but eight path factor. But when you encounter anything in life, it can solve. Means it can give. That one is a very good analogy. So don't go and separate all this cultivation. Because Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, or Noble Eightfold Path, is only one path. That's why it's the meditation as taught by the Buddha. It's not broken down. But to explain, of course, you can say this is Sila, this is Samadhi, and this is wisdom. But the actual understanding is different. The actual wisdom is only right view. Right thought is not under right wisdom path factor. But traditionally, in the Theravada teaching, they put right thought and right view as the Panya factor. No, actually it's only right view or right understanding. Then when it comes to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, these are under Sila. Then the four right effort is thought-based effort. Then after that, Sati and Samadhi is the real meditation. That is Samadhi part. So to develop Samadhi, you need Sati, stabilize it. Don't go into Apana Samadhi or concentration. Just Upachara Samadhi means a free mind that is collected and unwavering, but it's not in absorption or concentration. It's just in the state of Samadhi, unwavering, collected. That's why you can see things as they are. It can insight into phenomena. It can awaken. It's still a free mind. So when you are in that state, the mental hindrance are not under what they call suppression. You are not suppressing anything. They can still arise. That's why you can check. Then when you use this samadhi in the midst of light, daily mindful, you can still see the habitual tendency, how they stir, how they react. Where all the mental hindrance, they are not being suppressed under the conditioned state. When you are in apana samadhi, they are all suppression. Everything is what they call not rooted out yet. Is they call it, there's this word. But it's still there. Like suppression. But you don't know that you suppress it because you are in that state of concentration, the absorption, the continuous mindfulness or one-pointedness. So the energy field is so strong. But there was one guy who say, if you use samadhi energy, you can burn the defilement. I don't think so. Yeah, somebody mentioned it to me, but I don't think so. He say when you have very powerful, strong samadhi, it can burn all this. They call defilement or anusaya, but I don't think so. Yeah, my understanding is very easy. Without wisdom, you cannot free, you cannot liberate, you cannot understand the form and mind. You will be trapped. So all this, you have to find out on your own when you develop the cultivation. So this is the part that I want you to make a note. So don't be like very excited when people share you something, then you just take it. Then looks like what I used to share with you, or like that word is what? Can be acceptable to most people. What word they use? There's a word. Logical, yes. Doctor, remember, okay. Whatever that is logical, you have to be careful. Don't be gullible. Not until you go into the cultivation, you cannot see all this. So that is the part I want to clarify. So hopefully you can develop more clearer understanding with that. Adeline, okay?
Yes. No, not. Actually, I make it wrong. Actually, the three circles is interlinked. Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. It's three circles is linked, and then the Samadhi is at the center in it. Then he said need the Samadhi to support the two ends. So actually, it's
No. Samadhi don't support the Sila. Sila comes first, then only Samadhi fall into place. That's why I say it's not the thing, not what you describe. Because you say it support the two. No. Sila comes first. Sila is right view, right understanding. Then samadhi is the resultant of your sila in place. Then only the mind can settle down and samadhi kick in. Then only wisdom come to be. Then only you can see things as they are. Straightening of view and all those things. Initially is the initial right view from the Noble Eightfold Path. That's why the Buddha teach the initial three types of right view. Kama Niyama, Chitta Niyama, and Dhamma Niyama. Then from there, you start your cultivation, Pariyatti, the learning of the doctrine, the teaching, and all that. Like my daughter did the mind map. Then after that, you understand why you must keep Sila. Because it is from the law of karma, the advice of the Buddha. You have to avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind. The Buddha never say samadhi, then sila. No. He sila first, then samadhi come in. Because all these are natural sequence. Even dana, sila, bhavana. Bhavana is samadhi and panya. They follow this sequence. But when it comes to Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, it's one cultivation, one path, Noble Eightfold Path. It's not broken up. So you go through the cultivation, then you will understand. Yeah? Because it's very easy to actually get entangled. Because Dhamma is very prone to deviation when you don't really have the clear understanding. There are a lot of things appear like very beautiful Dhamma, or like what is being described is very logical, very beautiful. But when you have the understanding already, when you go through the color, you realize not like that, not what was described. Because the real process of cultivation that you actually go through is totally different from what is being popularly accepted or assumed popularly accepted by most people within the Buddhist fraternity. So even the Buddhist community. So a lot of things that you read in the book or in the commentary, you have to be careful. Because these are still commentary. These are still what people write. Unless the person who write has the awakening and the understanding, then different. And then the moment you read, you will know. But otherwise, you have to be careful. It's just like the way the Buddha shared over the years, 2000 over years. If it's still the authentic Buddha Dharma, if the commentary and everything is still the authentic one, we should have more and more enlightened beings in it. True or not? Like scientists, when they progress, they really create a lot of understanding, and that understanding actually caused science and technology to move forward. That's why we progress so fast over the last 30 years, or the last 2 or 3 centuries. No, 30 years is not even one century. Sorry, decade, the last 3 decades. So similarly, if the teaching are still correct, authentic, there should be more and more enlightened beings in there, more and more Arya in there. But how come we are not finding it? It's like the opposite. That's why you have to be very careful when you read all this Dhamma book or listen to some of this type of sharing. I'm not saying all is not correct, but you have to be careful. You have to really develop that. Don't be too eager or gullible to accept and grasp and hold. Go through the cultivation, find out for yourself, then investigate. Then you will develop that. Not until you have awakened, it's not easy to differentiate. Really, it's not easy to differentiate. Okay, Adeline? So don't worry about what happens.
No problem. Right? I did a lot of contemplation on the samadhi.
Take it as a learning curve, process that you go through.
Yeah, every day is learning.
Because you need to adjust. There's a lot of refinement that you need to do. A lot of people who don't understand cultivation, they become like very easily gullible. That everything is like so beautiful, Dhamma, Dhamma, Dhamma everywhere. But like I used to share with you all, when you have the cultivation ready, you listen again, you read again, different. That is not what the actual thing is. Because most of these book or commentary, they contradict themselves. Then they follow tradition, they follow what is popularly accepted, and they dare not use their own experience or understanding to describe, except for certain cultivator who really have the understanding. They dare to say that, and they dare to go against the commentary. Like Ajahn Buddhadasa, the Patichasamutpada, he don't agree the 3 lifespan. That's why he is very good, and I truly agree and concur with what he understood. That's why when I read his book, the Patichasamutpada, in the early days, it was a very beautiful book. Okay, Adeline, you want to add anything else, or you want to nominate somebody?
So today actually it prompted me to read the Heart Sutta again on the
Yeah.
You know, suddenly it's like, you know, how to be 自在.
Yeah.
It's like, 你无色无受想行识.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole sentences is, I counted, there's 21 wu there. From the 无色受想行识无眼耳鼻舌身意无色声香味触.
Yeah, like I explained just now, Adeline, you have to listen to this carefully. Yeah?
Okay.
It's not a concept. It's in true emptiness.
Yes.
Guan Yin mentioned in true emptiness, he is Sariputta. In true emptiness, all these don't exist. That's why the five aggregate of form and mind. Then even the 18 sense right, all don't exist. So that one is not a concept. That one is the unconditioned Dhamma in true emptiness. And you don't try to like learn it as a concept, understand or not? Then take it as a Dhamma. Wow, so beautiful, all this thing. Oh, then you try to live life like, oh, all these don't exist. It's not like that. It's the unconditioned Dhamma wisdom. You must have that. But in the existential world, duality exists. 18 sense drive exists. Four noble truths exist. All these exist. That's why the conditioned Dhamma and the unconditioned Dhamma, they are two sets of different Dhamma. So in true emptiness, all these don't exist. So you have to really have that penetrative understanding. Without that, a lot of people cultivate the Heart Sutta as theory, very theoretical, and it's really beautiful. Because the Heart Sutta need the wisdom, penetrative wisdom. That's the reason why Kuan Yin Bodhisattva ultimately he summarize all of his wisdom into this Heart Sutta, Xing Qing. When he was cultivating the Prajna Paramita Sutta, the perfection of Prajna, he illuminated the five skandhas and realized they were all empty. That's how it starts. And that one is very profound. That's why finally he tell the cultivator, Zhen Kong Miao Yu. In true emptiness, existence is wonderful. That's why existence is still existent. In the conditioned world, it exists. That's why it becomes meaningful, wonderful. Then everything falls into place, no contradiction. Otherwise, it's a lot of contradiction. Then if you treat it as a concept, you get caught inside there. Because you want to like believe that this is the mind that can have all this concept. No, because that one is the unconditioned Dhamma, it's a wisdom. You awaken, then you realize all this that belong to the mundane world or the conditioned world only exists within the conditioned world. Within the ultimate truth, the unconditioned, all this cease because you know why. That true mind, that true nature has got no words, no concept, no thinking, nothing. That's why it don't have anything inside that. That's why everything also like you say, woo, woo, woo. It's because that nature is like that. It's not a concept where you try to leave it. No, it cannot be done. The leaving is to understand both the conditioned Dhamma and the unconditioned Dhamma. That's why the teaching, the Dhamma that the Buddha taught, they exist in the conditioned world. And you need that teaching to free, to develop the wisdom. Then the wisdom connected to our five area of form and mind, that nature, that one know how to live life, the triangle. You have to contemplate that one and develop the understanding. It's not easy. A lot of people are trapped in concept, knowledge. The actual cultivation is not what people think. Hopefully today one will help a lot of people, not only you, Adeline. Because lot of this, as you go through, you will understand more and more. Like what Song went through, he know. Actually, cultivation, so much thing involved. Oh, at first he thought, wow, Gautam already, the Hansutta, he read so many times, then he thought finally. Then later on he realized somehow, but the understanding is unending. There is so much thing to it. That as you stabilize that understanding, the nature within, your penetration of truth, awakening to wisdom, take a different form again. Okay? Really?
Especially after gone through so many months of Heart Sutta.
I recently, like I told you, I
did the Sulangama Sutra.
So
I did a lot of insight reflection. So then today when I read all these words by words, it really penetrates deeply, you know. So, you know, the first word that came out to me is a zhen kong miao yong. It's really not easy.
Initially, when you listen to too much of this type of sharing, this type of talk, then your focus on the daily mindfulness and the real cultivation didn't go through. You will be trapped in the Dhamma knowledge. The Dhamma knowledge will trap you. It will appear like the Dhamma is so beautiful, like you have to understand. But when you develop the daily mindfulness until it's very stable, then when you have the awakening and the penetrative understanding, then you come back and listen again, then you realize a lot of the thing that you heard is not what it is anymore. That's why you have to be careful. Even reading the Heart Sutta, that's why I say the cultivation, the daily mindfulness, developing the wisdom, must go hand in hand with the pariyati. The pariyati, after you have developed the understanding, you cannot go too deeply into pariyati and forget about patipati. You have to come out to face to Dhamma to cultivate in daily life. Put the teaching into cultivation. Then see it with the daily mindfulness. Then stabilize your awareness nature. Unless your patipati become very stable, very strong, and you awaken and the wisdom become very stable, you can never understand the deeper part of the teaching. Like that day doing dana, I told Chui, I share with you all. If you don't cultivate and develop the wisdom, you cannot reach that level of doing dana, like Chui say, pure action, without the self, without all those delusions. You can't. Well, you need wisdom. Without wisdom, there is no real virtue. Do you understand? So without wisdom, similarly, without patipati wisdom, there is no real comprehension of pariyati. Pariyati need wisdom, understanding, to really awaken. That's why you have to move. You cannot, the theory part or the Dhamma part, you go very deeply, then cultivate a lot of that, then like, wow, everything is like fall into place, like that one is not the real one. The real one is after your daily mindfulness stabilized. Remember what I say, not until your daily mindfulness can become heedfulness in the midst of life, the real meditation has not really started. The real insight, the real awakening. You have to penetrate that one. Once that one come through already, then your understanding becomes very different again. So this part, make sure Kayamita develop the understanding. Otherwise, many will fall and get trapped at the pariyati level. Then you believe and think that you already have the understanding. Yeah, the Dhamma like very beautiful, like very meaningful to you, and everything like fall into place. Yeah, there is some form of understanding, but this is not the penetrative type. Because when your daily mindfulness is not that stable, when it's not heedfulness, a lot of things you cannot see, your habitual tendency, or you cannot deal. The real virtue, you cannot understand. The true mind, the pure, you cannot understand. You have to go into it. So this part, hopefully, Adeline, So thank you for bringing out the condition.
So understand, Brother Teo. Thank you for the guidance. Yes.
More and more people can have the understanding. Yeah, this is very important. I realize a lot of people initially they get trapped. What you went through, I think earlier on, quite a number of Kayamita also caught in that. But later on, they decide to go into the awareness cultivation. That one transformed them. So there are more and more Kayamita now is moving into the daily mindfulness, taking the Bodhisattva vow, then develop the religious routine until throughout the day you are aware and mindful. Then only that true mind, the silent mind, it will shine forth that nature. Then like throughout the day, you are ever mindful, constantly meditative. And then that stage can be there for a few years. Then you will awaken. Then you will go through all the stages of awakening. And then only you start to understand what Dhamma is, the real Dhamma. Then that time, you will have a lot of joy. You will smile. You become very different. Then you realize the happy joy tendency or no more, everything rooted out. Then you are normal, at peace. Otherwise, you can't. Okay? Sadhu,
Yes. Thank you, Brother Teo.
Thank you for the condition.
Brother Teo. Brother Teo, 你今天的这个，你在讲这个，Sila Samadhi 跟 Panya 很简单，但是非常的重要。它是一个很 basic 的一个 understanding。
对。
但是，我听了，我觉得，我们每个 cultivator 一定要很了解这个 part， 然后要很心细的去从最 basic 的那个 step 做起。
对。
然后你 step by step， 你去做的时候，你的 understanding initially 它是 part by part 的来。
对。
然后 after 当它到某一个 level stable 了以后，你的那个 view 就会。
Straighten myself, 慢慢
straighten, 你的 mind 就会 understand itself, like, 你会 understand 它。
对。
所以它这整个的 path, 它是要走回那个最 basic 的 mindfulness。
对。
直到你还有去做那个party,就是去把你的这个 understanding 去 stabilize
the wisdom。Otherwise the habitual tendency 那些 root put through 的，
对。Then from there onward, 你有了 yoniso manasika,
that one will protect you. Yes.
Mindfulness 了以后，我们的 mind 才能够 stable 到进入 sampajana. Then from sampajana 过后，这个才是 real meditation。
对。
我们才能够真正的去 cultivate
去明
白我们的自己的 mind。
Yeah.
From the three way of the actions。
Yeah. Three type of right conduct.
Then from there onward， 你就会慢慢的，当你开始了，当我们开始能够 aware 到了解到我们自己的healers。
That's why without mindfulness, you can't put down. How your mind stir, how your memory, the conditioning, the views, the opinion, all those things, your insecurity, fear, worry, anxiety, you can't put down. Without that stability of mindfulness, all this subtle defilement, you can't put down. That's why what you describe is very true. Then the whole thing is actually Avijja Sutta.The sutta on ignorant, the 10 step, 一定要去了解，慢慢去行，慢慢去做。That's why Patipatti is step 4 and 5. Step 1, 2 and 3 is relatively easier. But step 2 need a lot of hard work, a lot of diligence, perseverance. Think, they'll contemplate, reflect.Then silent, meditate, then develop the faith, then after that, develop the straightening of the view. The straightening of the view, initially, 很多工作的 nobody ever found. 那个 three type of right view, the initial right view, that the Buddha mentioned, from there, 你就 connect, 联系到 the advice of the Buddha, then like the mind map that my daughter produced, then 你 realize all those are the Dhamma, but 你要去行哦，你要去 cultivate 哦。So you realize without mindfulness, you are not aware of your mental intention or then what constitutes evil also you don't know. That's why all this, 一定要去了解。Then he really developed the clear understanding. Then through the daily mindfulness, you start to develop the real cultivation. Then 你一到了 sati sampajana, oh, that is the real meditation already. Then initially is the straightening of the view to give rise to yoniso manasikara. That phase is also very important, step four. So once the yoniso manasikara arise, then you will have more and more space between thought, more and more what they call clarity. Your mind will not stir and react like before because you have more and more straightening of the view already. Your yoniso manasikara is there already. So this is the one that changed a cultivator from being heedless to heedful living and heedful cultivation. Then only step 5, sati sampajana, can fall into place. Without the initial wisdom, it cannot. That's why you must develop the daily mindfulness to see all this. Then stabilize it from step 4 leading to step 5. Step 4 leading to step 5 is very important. This yoniso manasikara, you need a lot of contemplation, reflection, then the sitting meditation, daily mindfulness. All this has to come in. Then after you clear the initial wisdom arise already, then you will know. You tend to be more peaceful, more calm. Your mind is more at ease. You will not stir and react like normal. You will not behave like normal. And you don't need concentration or samatha mind, condition state or concentration to make you peaceful, to make you calm. You don't need. You only need samadhi. Samadhi is your mind is in continuous mindfulness but not into apana. Is the daily mindfulness that is upachara samadhi. Means it is still a free mind, but it's collected and unwavering. And most of the time you are aware. Your body and mind move as one. Kaya nupasana, very stable. After that, you will see the vedana, very clear. Then you will see your content or consciousness, the mind, citta nupasana, very clear. Then, of course, dhamma. So all this will move you and prepare you to actually cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. Then before this Noble Eightfold Path, of course, is the four foundation of mindfulness. The four foundation of mindfulness become very easy once you have clear step 4, 5, 6, and 7. Then you move into it. So what you share today is very good. So sadhu to you. Very good.
这是我当我们如果真正的一直在很 sincere 的去 cultivate, 你会发现到这些 dharma 的 point 全部是 interlinked 的。
Yeah,
我们一定要一定会 you have to go through, 然后它的来我们的 faith, 我们的 sincere, 我们的 perseverance, 我们的这个 wisdom, 全部它是 interlinked 来 support 你去 cultivate 这个 Eightfold Noble Path. 当你在走这个 Eightfold Noble Path 的时候，你在 purify 你的 mind 的时候，你会很清楚的去 understand 我们这个 form and mind 是怎样的被 deluted. From there, 当你一 awaken from 这个 delusion 的时候，你就能够了解到 Mahayana里面所讲的那些经典了，因为那些东西都是要去 realize, understand 这个 form and mind.
对，sadhu, sadhu, very good, you describe it very well, sadhu. 好啊，
但是我是觉得好，我们现在每一个cultivator, 我们一定要去要回那个最 basic 的那一个cultivation.
Yeah. That's why
我们有没有在做报应？ 我们有没有在做我们的Buddha？ 我们有没有在recite那个 Bodhisattva Wolf？ 一直把我们的那个 foundation 在 build out， 在
stabilize 它。
当我们每一天在做的时候，当你的那个 like 那个 fruits 它要ripen 的时候，它是 condition 它就会 ripen， 它就会 unfold。
对。
哎，它就自己的，你就自己的能够去 go through 了。
Yeah。
那个 understanding 还会自己的 unfold。
Yes, sadhu. That is the path of cultivation. That's why the whole Dhamma teaching is connected. And when you understand already, you really put in the cultivation. That's why I say persevere, just do, don't try to know. Silence your mind, develop the stability of the mindfulness, the awareness nature within. Then develop the daily mindfulness, religious routine. Not until you go into that, the real cultivation haven't started. So initially, Pariyatti is just the learning of the teaching. So that one, I think our website has a lot. But like Song just now described, is very good. You have to go back to basic. Sing Wei Ken Pen. From basic, you start. Then all of this fall into place. Like the mind map that my daughter Sui did. From there, everything is built up. And is one connected, big zigzag parcel. That's why the Buddha's teaching is all connected. Not single Dhamma here and there. No, they are all linked. Connected in like a big family. It's like Noble Eightfold Path. Those who know how to play Mahjong, you will understand. Any of the Tong Chi come out, he will game one. Triple one, triple nine, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, if it did. Any Tong Chi come, you will game. So all this understanding is very important and very beautiful. Sadhu, Song, let us rejoice. Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu. 很好啊，还有什么吗？
没有了 ，very few， 因为刚才我在听了这个 sharing 的时候，突然间有很大的这个感触啊。
对。Because your sharing is very important, so that more and more Kayamita and cultivator develop the understanding. Because 很多人呢是 caught at the words, the Dhamma words. Because like even sometimes you go and listen to Mahayana Sutta, because I have shared with you all, taught you all, but if you didn't go into the party, didn't strengthen your daily mindfulness, your true understanding is not there one. But to you, like, wow, it's very beautiful, like they say, 人生难得经已得，佛法难闻经已得，经已闻。So all this, you can see, that there is some understanding, but you have not penetrated the real pati. That's why the deep meaning, you still cannot understand. You may think you understand. So a lot of cultivators get caught in listening to all this. That's why I say the focus should be the cultivation, like I tell Chui. If you don't develop the cultivation to develop the wisdom, you cannot perform that dana at that level. Pure dana means not tinted dana. So cultivation is the same. The real understanding and wisdom can only come when you have developed the cultivation. Otherwise, it's just dhamma words. So that part is very important. Because that is the part I realize a lot of cultivators, they understand the beauty of these words or those things. Then they determine, but they didn't push the cultivation part. The cultivation part is not easy unless you really have the understanding and determination. Those who take the Bodhisattva vow seriously, their cultivation, they go deep and they progress very fast. But a lot who are more interested in Dhamma knowledge or the words, they didn't really go deep enough into the cultivation. That's why I advise Adeline, The cultivation and the understanding must go side by side together. Where if you don't develop the cultivation, your understanding will stagnate. Stagnate. You may think you understand, but actually you stagnate there already. Because the deeper penetrative understanding can only come about with the awakening that comes from the cultivation, like what you go through. So that's why now you understand. They have to actually step by step develop the faith, develop the sincerity, then persevere, then go back to basic one by one, cultivate. Okay? Sadhu. Okay, I think we can end. We are 10:45 already. Thank you for all the sharing. So once again, we thank Sister Adeline, Brother Song, for all the good condition for Dhamma to arise. So let us rejoice one more time. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.